Are you sick of those damn political crusaders? The anti-libertarian Libertarian Party? Sick of the violence and coercion that makes up the statist servile society with seemingly no escape? Are you looking for real practical solutions to increase your personal freedom and your invulnerability to coercion? If so, kick off your shoes, come inside the polyethylene A-tent, and let's talk Vanu. Join your hosts, Shane and Kyle, as they further explore this freedom strategy and develop it into the modern day. You're listening to the Vanu Podcast.
And welcome to the Vanu Podcast, the podcast making you invulnerable to coercion. I'm Shane Ann.
I'm Jason.
Since governments are the primary coercers upon individuals, this podcast and everything found on the website is covered by a BIPCONT and no government license. This allows reuse and modification to anyone, except for governments and the bludgies thereof. You can learn more at BIPCONT.org. So as you can tell, no Kyle today. We will be getting together to record tomorrow and Saturday. It's March 22nd today. But that will be for the Building the Second Realm series we're doing over on Liberty Under Attack Radio. Definitely go check that out if you haven't already. Anyways, Jason, great to have you back on the podcast. So you had an unexpected hospital visit recently, and you got diagnosed with bronchitis. Yes, it's Thursday, 3 days later, and you're here to record a podcast, the Vanu Podcast. So I just want to go ahead and let the listeners know that Jason here is a trooper. How are you feeling?
I feel like death incarnate. No, not really. I feel my throat hurts. I'm so tired from not sleeping, and coughing sucks, and the fever. It's like I'm always hot. But I'm here doing the podcast because I love Vanu. I love the idea. I love seeking personal freedom, and I love helping other people try to be free. And I love doing the podcast. So I'm going to suffer through it.
Well, I know I'd appreciate it. I know I appreciate it. I'm sure the listeners do too. But I told you yesterday that I wouldn't let you suffer through a podcast, but I guess I'm going to fall back on my word now.
I'm an anarchist. I do what I want.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's right. So we got together last week, Jason, to record a Patreon exclusive. It was basically just updates on the Van Nomadism Progress, future speaking engagements, my upcoming book, and more. But it was still a valuable episode. If you'd like to become our sixth patron, we had two in just the past week. Just visit patreon.com/Vanu. You'll get access to a handful or so of exclusive episodes and other subscriber-only content, which will soon include new Vanu publications. So first off, thanks to our two new patrons. There is Richard, and then there is a username that I don't remember off the top of my head. Thank you so much for subscribing to the Vanu Podcast. I don't remember if I've thanked you before on the mainline episodes, but I'll go ahead and get that out of the way here. We certainly appreciate the support. Hope you're digging that content that I mentioned a moment ago. So yeah, Jason, new Vanu publications. Are you hyped for that too?
Oh, I am so hyped. You sent me the list, and I'm looking through the list, and it's like 11 straight months of of Innovator. Right? Yeah. Is that what it was?
11 Innovator, straight January through November 1967.
Plus other publications that we don't have. So it's like, what, 19 total publications? New to us publications, something like that?
Oh, yes. So there's 11, I'll go through the list here. Innovator, January through November 1967, which is 11 issues, if my math is correct. Which may not be. I went to government school. So Innovator, March and Autumn 1968, two issues. I'm guessing the autumn one will be larger. Innovator, Spring, Summer, Autumn, Winter, 1969, three likely larger issues. Living Free, number 79, July 1993, that's Jim Sums' publication, which we actually haven't gotten any of Living Free yet. We have a bunch of other ones he put together, but not Living Free, which he referenced so much. So yeah, Living Free, number 79, July 1993, and Living Free, number 81, November 1993. So yeah, I guess to do the math here, 11 plus 2. 13 plus 3 is 16, and then two more, which is 18. So yeah, 18 new publications. That will double our archive, that'll double our already massive archive,
which that's going to be absolutely our massive archive is being doubled. So yeah, now it'll be a massive archive. It'll be 36. But I'm excited. I'm really excited to dig into these, as I was when I first got to read the other ones, doing all the editing stuff. I'm juiced for it. This is going to be so exciting. Big thanks to I forgot the guy's name now.
Mr. Wally Conger, who's been in the libertarian community for like 30 years, 30 freaking years. He's been in the same room as Konkin and some other folks. So he lives out in California. He has forever, at least for most of his life that I'm aware of. And he used to go to a lot of the or like weekly gatherings with like names of libertarians. Like it'd be like the Samuel Konkin hour or something like that. Like it'd be like a dinner hour. You'd go there, have dinner, and listen to Konkin speak, and like just pretty much there's one of those every single week. So he went to a bunch of those, and he acquired this catalog of publications. So he's generous. He's being generous enough to make copies of them. I told him, I can borrow them, get them digitized, and send them back. But he's going to make copies of all of these things for me, so I'll actually be able to keep, hold on to them, have a personal copy. So that's pretty neat. That's definitely pretty neat. But I don't know, man. I'm excited for Innovator because that's everything in Innovator is going to be Rayo's words. Yes. Now, obviously, there were some valuable publications like Self-Liberation Notes and some others like that. But those were Jim Stump's publications, and there might have only been one or two articles by Rayo. We're going to learn a lot from Innovator. A lot.
Yeah, it's Rayo's words. I mean, we have, the first book and part of the second that are Rayo's?
Yeah, and then Going Mobile, which Rayo wrote some of the stuff in there.
Yeah, so we don't have a whole lot of Rayo work. But
we're gonna come up with 16 publications of his work. So it's gonna be really, really incredible.
I'm getting goosebumps.
I know. So what we're gonna do, guys, is because I don't have as much time to digitize these as I did before. So what we're going to do, it's gonna be more of a long term project, and we're going to start, chronologically. So we're going to start with January Innovator. We'll talk about about two or three articles at each episode. They'll be Patreon exclusives. And each time we record, I'll digitize the articles we cover specifically. So I'll only have to do two or three, a week. And I know how this is going to be, Jason, because I'm going to bust my ass and get these done. I'll prioritize things. And yeah, that's the initial plan, so I don't kill myself over this. But I know how I am. I'll probably get these out. It'll take a little more time. It won't be just a couple few months like before, but I'm gonna churn them out. So
of course. Following after your speaking engagement, I think you'll have a little bit more time, and you will just churn them out because you love to do it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it'll be I don't know, but the surefire thing is that we are going to do Patreon exclusive episodes on these publications. So again, if you haven't signed up as a patron, you need to. You really need to. I guarantee the content is valuable enough for your $2 a month, or if you want to, go to a higher subscription tier, it's definitely worth it. It really, really is. We're covering some great stuff over there. Again, patreon.com/Vonu.
Yep, go to 5 and get Kyle's emails.
Yes. And that list is actually active. I should be getting an email from Kyle for our $5 a month subscribers, here in the next week or two. So still time for you to go ahead and get that first email. So anyways, today's episode is number 41 of the podcast, the fourth in our mini-series on van nomadism. It is titled Making a Living on the Road, and the show notes can be found at vonupodcast.com/41. Today we're going to discuss money, the cost of living on the road, in addition to making an income as a nomad. There will be some rehashing of material from season 2, but predominantly this will be brand new content. And this is an important episode. I think one of the major obstacles keeping people from nomadic lifestyles is the daunting challenge, the seemingly daunting challenge of making a living without a stable, a stable 9-to-5 job in the survival society. And I'll be honest, most of these options are not easy. But there are a couple safe fallbacks. Concomitantly, it's important to know what the average cost of this lifestyle is so you can determine how much money you will need to make a month. Thankfully, once you hear the average monthly cost, though, I think some of that dauntingness, that's a word, will fade away. Keep in mind, we're all individuals, and these details will vary. It's important that you sit down and calculate your own expenses and your own situation. So, Jason, anything before we get rolling?
I just want to say that the advent of technology and the amount of work that is done online these days or is capable of being done online these days makes Van Nomadism a hell of a lot easier than in Rayo's day.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Rayo had to, you know, one of the aspects of the Second Realm is mobility and remoteness. And we have the ability to become more invulnerable to coercion than Rayo was simply because we can do things over the internet. We don't have to be face to face. We don't have to show our identity. We can remain anonymous if that's possible in the transaction. And yeah, it's a lot easier. It's definitely a lot easier. So Rayo had to basically have you know, engineering clients that he would take on, and seasonal and temporary employment. That was what he was relegated to, and it required more import export than I think modern Van Nomads would have to. Some of them do more import export, but as far as a necessity, it's quite low. It's quite low. So anything else?
Nope.
All right, so let's start with the average cost of living for Van Nomadism. And the source for my, I guess, the source for the numbers I'm going to present to you here are from looking at about 100 different Van Nomad couples or singles or whatever, trying to figure out how much this lifestyle costs. So I've heard anywhere from $250 a month. Yes, $250 a month. It was a lady living out of her minivan. And she didn't spend any money. so that's pretty incredible. But yeah, anywhere from $250 to $1,000 a month. Now, I'm sure there are some that's, you know, maybe pursued financial independence before and have a lot of money, and therefore they may, you know, treat themselves more. But generally speaking, as far as the core expenses, $250 to $1,000 a month, and most of the numbers I've heard are from $500 to $750. The $250 and $1,000 are more kind of the outliers. So $500 to $750 a month. Now, Jason, I think some of our listeners might be paying that much for just their housing situation alone.
I pay more than just that for housing alone.
Yeah, it's a cheap lifestyle. It's a cheap lifestyle. Once you get rid of that major expense, the mortgage, the house, and the home insurance, the whatever else isn't incurred, property taxes, that eats away a lot of people's income. So, as is evident, once you drop that major expense, you don't need a whole lot of money.
Well, yeah, and it's not just the rent or the mortgage or the property tax. It's also the electrical, the water, the cable, the gas, if you have gas, the garbage, all that, or, you know, the home insurance, the flood insurance, all this other stuff.
It adds up. It really adds up.
It adds up fast. It adds up real fast. I think I was reading an article not too long ago that the majority of Americans pay almost or just over half their bring home pay in rent and utilities alone.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's really, really crazy. So I guess to do some itemization here to really prove the point. So I'd say $750 to $1,000 is probably pretty average for your middle class sort of folks. Because I actually found out my mom told me yesterday for some reason what they paid, but my dad makes a lot of money, so I'm gonna, you know, be safer here and say about $750 to $1,000 a month is probably what the average, you know, just the mortgage, right? Just the average cost for a mortgage, and maybe that's wrong, but we'll just go with this for the sake of example. And utilities, I guess we'll break this up. I guess trash, maybe that's like $20 or $25 a month. What do you think?
not where I live.
Okay, yeah, you're in California. You're in California, so it's
probably... I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is astronomical.
That's the place where they smell their own farts, right? Or is that just a South Park myth?
That's a South Park myth.
Okay, I wasn't sure. I've never been there.
A lot of people do smell like farts, though.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Maybe we shouldn't do this itemization because we've got listeners from all over the world and these things are going to vary. Because I know what I paid at the last house I lived in, that my brother and I had. And, I don't think our numbers are going to be similar to pretty much anybody's here. Maybe that's not a good idea. Anyways, the point is that housing itself, eats up a massively large portion of people's take-home pay. That's the point. So once you get rid of that major expense, then you don't need a whole lot to live on. So that's kind of the idea here, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's if you really think about it, if you lived on $600 a month, that's $20 a day. Think about how much food that is, like how much food you realistically would eat if you were living in a van. If you ate fast food every single day, three meals a day, I could see you spending $20. But if you're eating very simple, right? If you're eating out of cans or eating out of a dried food, if you're making, you know, simple rice dishes or oat dishes, oatmeals, things like that, it would be very difficult for you to realistically spend $20 a day just on food.
Oh gosh. Oh yeah. You know, yeah. Easy. Less than 10. Easy. Yeah.
Easy to spend less than 10. And even if you ate just $10 worth of food a day, that's only $300 a month. And you were saying that the average Vanu is like $500 to $750. That's $200 past what you're spending in food. And that's gonna cover your gas, your automobile insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, plus putting a little bit aside in case of emergencies. So realistically, if you're eating like, you know, $10 or $12 a month, you're gonna be, or $10 or $12 a day, you're gonna be fine. You're totally gonna be fine. If you average $25 a day in food, utilities, rent, or food. Food utilities, rent, food, insurance, gas, putting little things aside, buying yourself a little something special. $25 a day, that's only $750 a month.
Right. And I'm sure, and even this is even for me too. Now I do eat out most days, but I eat off the dollar menu for frugality purposes, right? But whenever you're a van nomad and you don't have to work as much, when you're spending less, you don't have to work as much. I think the major reason why people don't, why people utilize the conveniences that they do, is because they work 40 hours a week and they don't have time, or they don't want to make time to do those things. So if you have, if you work three half days a week like Carl, and you've got a lot of free time, then making a couple meals a day really isn't that big of a deal. You have that time available. But anyways, let's move forward here. So to reiterate, the average cost of living for van nomadism is anywhere from $250 to $1,000 a month, typically between $500 to $750. So let's look at the core expenses, which we've already kind of gone into. So core expenses as a van nomad. First off, food, obviously. I mean, that's kind of you kind of need that sustenance to survive. So that one we've already talked about quite extensively, but that's a really important expense, right? Really, really important expense. Water's cheap. Well, yeah, water's not really a problem. I think the only problem with water that you might run into is your dirty water, or gray water, as they call it. You know, you may have trouble finding places to dump that, but you won't have problems acquiring fresh water to drink. You just won't. Next one would probably be car insurance. And keep in mind, this is probably going to be a little higher. I mean, for me, I pay about $35 a month for just liability only on my car. For this one, you'll probably pay a little more than you would for just a normal, you know, commuting vehicle. I would presume, because this is your house. So as I mentioned, maybe this is in the Patreon episode, but we'll talk about this next week. For car insurance, there's four things you have to have in order for your vehicle to be able to be insured as a home, to have that extra liability insurance, I guess. So it's probably going to be a little more expensive, I'm guessing, since you're going to be insuring it as a house. But then again, if you compare, if you're paying a little more for your car insurance that also doubles as your house, and not having to pay the housing insurance, I don't even know what that costs nowadays. I didn't worry about that at the house that I lived in. That wasn't my responsibility. But still probably going to be a whole hell of a lot cheaper for sure. I mean, you're talking about anywhere from a $5,000 van up to, if you go with a Dodge Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, maybe like $50,000. Insuring that is a lot cheaper than insuring a $150,000 house. That's just kind of a given, right? So the car insurance might be a little more than what you pay for your car now, but if you consider the alternative, paying for, you know, actual, you know, homeowner's insurance, then I don't think that's really too big of a deal. And I'm not going to put numbers in for these things because it all depends upon what you decide to do, right? If I have a $5,000, you know, Ford, E-Series van, and you have, and you decide to buy a $25,000, you know, used Dodge Sprinter, our insurance prices are not even going to be in the same ballpark.
Oh yeah, right? Not only that, but different states are going to be different amounts, people's driving records, their age, their health, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many factors at play when determining insurance that you couldn't hammer down a single number.
Right, right. So yeah, I wish I could provide numbers for all these things, but it really, really does just depend. So car insurance.
Do your own research, people.
Yep. As I said before we got into this, you're going to have to sit down and figure these things out yourself after you get your van, after you figure out how much your insurance is going to cost, all those things. You'll have to itemize this yourself and figure out, because there's no way in hell that we could do this for you. Unless you want to send us an email with all of your personal business, then I'm sure we could help, but I think you guys are smart enough to figure this out on your own. But no, that wasn't slight, you know, a sleight of hand comment or anything like that. I'm just being honest. Like, you guys listen to this podcast, you're of a higher intelligence than most folks. Not to sound pretentious, but anyway, so car insurance, gas, water, food, or actually no, car insurance, food, water. Let's move on to gas now. So gas also depends. I mean, there's variables at play here. Now, when I make my first initial two road trips out to Texas and to Colorado, I'm going to be spending a lot more in gas than I typically would. A lot more. Now, I don't know what I'm going to do when I get to Colorado. Maybe I'll explore California, and maybe I'll head to the Siskiyou region, stay a couple nights where Rayo did. But that just depends upon how much you travel. Now, Rayo made a comment in one of the Vonnie publications, I think in Going Mobile, that a van nomad probably travels less than a normal person in the state of Serval society, because you know, a lot of van nomads stay in the same place for 3 or 4 days, whereas your normal 9-to-5er has to commute every single day, twice a day, and then they have to go and get groceries and everything on top of that. So van nomads, in Rayo's opinion, might actually travel less than those in the state of Serval society. So your gas prices might actually decrease depending upon how long you stay somewhere. So gas is going to be a pretty major expense if you decide if you're going to travel a lot, large distances. But if you don't, I mean, it's not going to be too big of an expense, right? So
that'll also vary between if you have an unleaded vehicle or premium unleaded or a diesel vehicle. A diesel is going to get you more or a better mileage on highway, but it's not going to get you as good a mileage if you're just doing little short jaunts. But it will on the highway, it'll get you better mileage than it will than unleaded will. So again, that's also variable on the size of your vehicle, the type of your vehicle, the weight of your vehicle, the weight of your conversion, and there's a lot of factors at play.
Right, right. Yeah, I certainly agree. And some folks have gas generators. You know, aboard their vehicle. The ones that people have, obviously, if they're going to use them to power, if they're going to trust them to power their things, they're pretty efficient. But if you have one of those, your gas prices will increase as well. I'm gonna go with solar and maybe have wind as a backup, but I'm not gonna mess with gas generators. I want to be as independent off the grid as possible. If I have to go re-up on gas all the time. To fill my generator. I don't like that whenever there's a really good alternative out there already.
Well, that and gas generators are loud and noisy and smelly, and that can attract attention.
Good point. Okay, so car insurance, food, water, gas, cell phone and Wi-Fi hotspots. Now, this may not be a requirement for some folks. I know some of the older folks in the Without Bound documentary don't bother with it. But I think... especially, you know, van nomadism is typically, or I guess in large part in some countries, it's basically a millennial movement. You know, the rent is theft people, the commie socialists. So they're going to have cell phone. They're going to have a cell phone and a Wi-Fi hotspot. And I think all of the nomads will have cell phones. But as far as a Wi-Fi hotspot, I think that's going to be a core expense for most everybody, especially if something we'll talk about here momentarily, especially if your job is based online. You got to be able to work and make money, and therefore you'll probably have to pay for a Wi-Fi hotspot. Or if one of your – actually, I'll stop there because we're going to talk about that. So that's another one, cell phone and Wi-Fi hotspot. So there was – one guy in the Without Bound documentary who had a Wi-Fi hotspot, it was like $35 a month, and I think you sent me the brand that was.
Yeah, I just went and found that picture. It's from MetroPCS. It's the Alcatel Link Zone, 10 gigabytes for $35.
Right. Now,
that's not a lot of data. I know.
No. I'm just trying to think because I got a warning on my phone that I was coming up on 16 gigs for the month of March a couple days ago, and that was with a bunch of South Park Hulu streaming. So that's actually pretty good as far as I don't think that's too bad really.
Yeah, if you're 16, just using
16 gigs, if you use it to just if you're doing a lot of uploading and downloading, then that might be you might need some more. But if you're just doing basic things like catching up on Fascist Book, writing some blog posts, things like that, then 16 gigs is quite a bit.
Yeah, you're not gonna run your Netflix on that. not at all. You're not gonna run your Netflix on that. But you can, if you're gonna run Netflix, you can, if you're willing to risk it, find a public Wi-Fi. And use that. Starbucks has public Wi-Fis. A lot of government buildings have public Wi-Fis. You could, if you were willing to risk it, connect to those, download all your Netflix stuff if you wanted to, and then go back into the woods.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You can download the stuff and have it later without needing the streaming. But I guess another possibility too, and you know, like there's the whatever caravan that's called. That the main characters from Without Bound were in, you know, whatever caravan they're in, or just a van nomad intentional community generally. You know, there also is an alternative of kind of a mesh network node where one person hosts the information, everyone just connects to it. So that would be a possibility down the road, and that's something I'd be looking for. seriously, even just like a private digital economy. I mean, the mesh networking is a possibility too, but you're not going to have access to all of what's available on the clear net. So that's a possibility, probably not for most folks, but anyways, as far as the expenses, the Wi-Fi hotspot and the cell phone's it's not going to be too much. I don't think.
I was just thinking that if there was a Vanu mesh network, uploading things like that could be an exportable income.
Yes, it could. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And data is cheap, and all you have to be a node on a network is, you know, a Raspberry Pi, a computer, a cell phone, just something for people to connect to and download from. So, mm-hmm. I mean, your expenses could be your expenses for operating this the side hustle, the side business, would be extremely cheap, and therefore you could pass those savings on to your friends, your customers. You know, for a small fee of $10 a month, have access to 5,000 TV shows. And boom, there you go. You've got yourself a little side hustle. So yeah, that's also another interesting idea, where the cell phone and Wi-Fi hotspot themselves, the Wi-Fi hotspot's going to be the most expensive one that I've seen. But just for a cell phone with unlimited data, not too much. And I guess this is a possibility too, as an alternative to Wi-Fi hotspots. Now, you do have to kind of deal with the throttling that AT&T is going to do to me this month, as they tend to do, I think. But you could have your cell phone with unlimited data and just have you could just watch on your cell phone and not have to worry about the data overages. So that's a possibility too. So that, as far as this being an expense, there's a lot of options. There's a lot of possibilities. There's also
still good old DVDs. Those things still exist. And they don't take data if you plug them, if you just watch them on your laptop.
What if your laptop doesn't come with you know, a CD or DVD reader because that technology is ancient? Well, then you can buy one for like $20-$25. I did that, but yeah. So that is a possibility. But then you're talking about having to store extra shit in your vehicle, which probably not that big of a deal. You can get a really thin DVD player, but still, I don't know. There's a lot of other options. I wouldn't even consider that for me personally. But for some people, maybe that'll work.
Well, I am like 15 years older than you, so
I forget that. I talk to people that are older than me, so I kind of forget that there's typically an age difference.
I remember VHS, damn it.
Hey, I remember that too, and I remember that we had one of the rewinders for him.
Yep.
I remember exactly what that thing looks like. Yeah, yeah. I remember those days. Yeah, yeah. Long time ago. I think I had those for like 5 years, and then DVDs came out.
Yeah. You know, you could stick that comment, right?
Whoops. Whoops. Fair enough. So, all right, back to it. So, car insurance, food and water, gas, cell phone and Wi-Fi hotspots. Now, repairs are going to be another core expense. Now, there are a couple of ways to deal with this and to approach this. You could have a nest egg. And I guess I'll move something I was going to talk about later on. I'll move that up into this section to talk about repairs. But for repairs, you could have just a nest egg set aside. You could have $5,000 that will only go towards repairs, and all of your other expenses are covered. That's one way to do it. Another, I guess, a backup plan that I'll have is a credit card, right? Because if I'm going to be living in this van and for some reason money's low, I kind of need those repairs done, right? And obviously, credit cards are awful and miserable, but you know, as a safety net, I don't think that's a bad option. It's definitely not Venuin, but you know, whatever.
Like we said before, Vanu is entirely individualistic, and repair when the repairs are not an if, they're a when. It's inevitable. It's going to happen.
Yeah. If, when, and what? Because is it going to be an engine? Is it going to be a transmission? Is it going to be, you know, maybe some spark plugs need replaced? Is it maybe the steering column, et cetera, et cetera? It could be a whole variety of things. So you never know what's going to go wrong. Well, maybe you do. Maybe you find the van, you take it to a mechanic, and he says, you know, the steering column's going to go out here soon. And you decide to wait on it, just waiting for that to happen. I don't know why you would, but you might know in advance. But anyways, yeah, you're right. You're not going to know. It's not an if, it's a when, for sure. So having some way to pay for that is definitely important. And again, it depends upon what goes wrong. We can't give you a number, you know, a dollar amount for this, because different things cost different parts cost different prices, and you know, different issues have different labor costs, labor hours. So,
oh, absolutely. It could be a $15 washer, or it could be a $5,000 transmission. It's a variable scale. And again, that also depends on the make, model, year, mileage of your vehicle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this is one of those things, like, you have homeowners insurance or renters insurance. You have money set aside for emergencies in the servile society. It would be no different in that aspect in a Vanu lifestyle. You have to have some sort of little nest egg, as Shane said, or some way in order to be able to pay for these repairs, or have the knowledge and ability to do these repairs, to do simple repairs at least.
Right, right. And another way to bring down this cost is if you have a van nomad intentional community, or some sort of a caravan, and you have someone that's a mechanic, that would definitely bring the cost down. You know, if you guys barter services, or even if he's just your friend and he doesn't charge you, you know, $150 an hour for the labor rate, maybe he just charged you $20 an hour, and you pay a couple hundred bucks versus a couple thousand. So working with those that you know is a great way to bring down this cost.
Maybe you'll get lucky and you'll just have to buy repairs and then make them some brownies in your solar oven.
Definitely an option. So, so the last two, and these are going to be the cheapest of all. A gym membership, which is a requirement. Well, it's not a requirement, but you're going to do it. Was it $10 to $20 a month? And you can go to Planet Fitness and get a shower and a shave.
Yep.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah. $10 a month. Yeah.
Yeah.
$10 a month, no questions asked. And you're always going to have a dry place to hang out and a shower. Yeah.
Right. And if it's raining for 3 days, you know, it'd be a nice little escape to go work out. So I mean, that one's definitely a no-brainer. Get a gym membership. They're so cheap. And unless, I guess the only real unless here is if you have like an actual hot working shower in your van, Maybe you don't do that, but again, it's so cheap. I don't see why any Van Nomad wouldn't, subscribe to that service. And the last one, a AAA membership. Now I don't know the cost specifically on this. I think I heard a couple hundred dollars a year, I think, is thereabouts. So yeah, this one is, I think also a requirement. If your car breaks down and you're in the area of a AAA, it costs a lot less to pay a couple hundred dollars a year for a couple tows versus, having someone, having a tow truck come out and get you and, charge you, out the ass for the service. So gym membership and AAA memberships, cheap, kind of no brainers.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the other things that I was thinking about after one of our previous shows, and it wouldn't be an expense, but it would be a very, very good thing to have, because you're going to have a cell phone. Number one, you're going to have a cell phone because everybody has to have the connectivity in emergency situations like that. But the Cell 411 app. The Cell 411 app, I see, in terms of Van Nomadism, could be one hell of a useful tool. Then you could set up your own little network on Cell 411 and have, if you have an emergency and you break down, hit the button and let people know that you're broken down. Let your fellow nomads know that you're broken down, and then anybody that's in the area can come and help you. Or if you're being harassed by the bludgies or something like that.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, that is an option. There will be a different alternative to that in the near future. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Cell 411. It's closed source and it's not privacy friendly.
It's not. Yeah, I know. But neither is a Planet Fitness membership.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. If for a gym membership, obviously you're gonna have to provide information. Obviously, but if there's a service available and there's a private and a non-private version, which one's more of a new one? Is kind of the idea. But yeah, point taken. Yes, I completely agree. Completely agree. Now I'm thinking of other expenses here, and these would just be kind of more individualized. So for me, and I guess this is kind of relevant here. So for me, my miscellaneous costs would be things like vape juice, which I order online, and I get about a 3-month supply for like $50, and it's a really good quality juice. It's from BigBottleCo.com for the other vapors out there. If you're paying $30 for a 30-milliliter bottle, you're getting ripped off. Probably stop doing that. Kratom, I get $100 kilos. That's cheap. I was paying $50 for 50 pills here in a local Decatur shop. A $100 kilo of Kratom can last me, I don't know. I still haven't gone through it yet. It's been like 2 months, and I still have probably about a half a kilo left. So that's cheap. Other things, I don't know. I don't really spend a lot of money on frivolous things. But I guess the point is here, if you have kind of those more individualized expenses that, just things that you enjoy, order online. Order in bulk. You can save a lot of money that way. And especially as a Van Nomad, do things that go hand in hand with it. Frugality and minimalism. It's kind of a necessity. So, for the things you don't have to have, but the things that make your life better in some sort of a way, buy them in bulk and probably buy them online. And you can save a lot of money. And that goes along with food, too. If you buy food in bulk, you save money there. So, and this is something Rayo talked about in the 60s. So this is not anything new. But I did notice, like, when I was hemorrhaging money the past couple of years, I realized that I was I kind of went through my budget and said, holy shit, Shane, what are you doing? So going online and ordering these things in bulk, or maybe even going down to a Costco or something like that to buy things in bulk, is a very, very wise idea. It can save you a lot of money. And then also it reduces your need for import-export. You go in, buy 3 months worth of supplies, then you don't necessarily have to go back to the Serval Society. So I think that's just kind of one other note I had on expenses. But what do you have?
I think the only thing that we missed on the expenses was the regular maintenance cost, the fluids and lubricants that are necessary to keep a vehicle in working order in order to prevent it from breaking down prematurely. Which realistically would not be very much, quarts of oil, some lubricants, an extra belt laying around, something like that. It wouldn't be very much. And then on the bulk food point that you made, if you have a van community, if you have an intentional community or a van convoy, you don't have to buy, you know, a 50-gallon bucket of rice for yourself, right? You can buy a 50-gallon bucket of rice collectively, and everybody, you know, take a share, or if you have some sort of group meal plan thing set up, you just do that.
Or sorry to butt in here for a second, but Ray also had an idea back in the 60s that if you buy a big bulk, you know, 55-gallon drum of rice, then you can sell that. You can sell that in, you know, maybe week or month, I don't know, servings, and you could recoup some of your losses there, maybe even net out, you know, even. So yeah, I think another thing with that is if you have a van nomad community to sell to, may not be a bad idea to buy in bulk and sell to your friends. I don't know.
There's also the idea of cachets. You can buy, you know, a big bucket of rice and divide it up and then bury some of it at various places that you're going to stop, so you don't have to carry all that food all the time.
I like that. I'm really, really happy you brought that up. Yes, cacheting. Yes, that's so for van nomads, I'm in a couple of fascist book groups, and you know, a lot of these people go to the same places. They have their, you know, five or six places they absolutely love, and they'll travel there a lot. So why couldn't you, you know, bury a 55-gallon drum of rice and other storable foods? Well, there's no reason you can't, as long as you do it wisely and it's not discovered. But yeah, that's a really terrific idea, and you wouldn't have to haul that shit around with you, getting lower gas mileage and you know, putting extra wear and tear on your vehicle. So yeah, that's a great idea. I'm happy you brought that up.
Well, additionally to that, not only would it not have the additional wear and tear on the vehicle, but in the event that something does happen, somebody, you know, some homeless guy breaks into your vehicle and steals your food or whatever else, things happen. Shit happens. You still have that food stored elsewhere. You can still get to that and have that to replace what was lost. And then you can replace what you took from the cache in the future.
Exactly. Diversifies your losses and makes them more minimal. Yeah, exactly. If you have everything in your van and you lose everything, that's pretty bad. But say they steal, you know, the food that you had on hand, which I don't know a whole lot of thieves that steal food, but you know, maybe it's possible. But if you have caches around, then it would still suck. Obviously, being stolen from sucks. It's a violation of your autonomy, but you wouldn't be too hurt by it. So yeah, that makes you more invulnerable to coercion as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we've laid out the core expenses and also some miscellaneous more, some expenses for that. We've laid out the expenses. So now kind of the main problem, right? As I said, one of the major obstacles for people, you know, not pursuing nomadic lifestyles, and that's making money on the road. And that is a cultural thing, Jason. It really is a cultural thing. What do people know? Well, they know that you go to government schools, you go to a high-level indoctrination, then you get a full-time job and you work 9 to 5 until you're 60, then you retire, and hopefully you don't die in the next 5 years so you can actually enjoy some semblance of freedom. It's cultural. It really is. There's this idea, you know, thankfully that's kind of changing with the advent of the internet, as we've kind of discussed in this episode thus far. But you know, I really do think this is kind of a state of servile society cultural sort of thing, too. As I said, it's not – some of these things are not easy. Honestly, guys, I've been trying to do a couple of these things for 3 years, and it's actually just now starting to kind of it's finally starting to return. So it's not easy, but there are some really, really safe fallback options for making money on the road. So let's talk about the – easiest ones first. And this is actually something that I'm going to do. One, basically because I want to be able to pursue the activity for free. And the other, that's, you know, working in the mountains is a lot better than working in a corn syrup industrial plant. You know, just disgusting. Disgusting. So anyways, let's cut the vagueness. Temporary and seasonal work. So as I've said, my plan is after a couple journeys to see Kyle and to go see Jason Paradise in Indiana and camp out there for a few days or a week or whatever, I'm going to go out to Colorado and work at the ski resorts for temporary seasonal work. And the main reason for that is I get free lift passes, so I can ski for free. And, you know, I can make some money and live out of my van. And with even if it's only like $12 an hour, if I spend like $10 a day, that'd be a lot of money I could still put into savings because I wouldn't have that that insurance. I wouldn't have to rent an apartment, et cetera, et cetera. So temporary and seasonal work is a great option. Ski resorts are only one possibility now with the marijuana industry. Well, I don't know if there's you can do it either black or you can do it kind of the black market or white market employment. But Jason Paradise, we have recorded an episode on this on LUA. It's called Black Market Botany. But Jason actually went out. This would have been 10 years ago, maybe. He went out and you know worked temporary seasonal work on a marijuana farm. And, you know, brought home a ton of money in just a few months. I think like $4,000 or $5,000 in a month or in a couple few months. I don't remember exactly what it was. But there are a lot of different industries that offer this sort of thing for farming, for marijuana harvesting, for a bunch of different things, right? There's a lot of seasonal work available. And then there's also just kind of the temporary jobs through some of these job agencies where, you know, you go and kind of apply with them and they give you a call when they have work available. There's also, and this is an interesting one I hadn't really thought of, but some people use the Facebook marketplace. And they'll just put up an ad saying, hey, looking for some work. I'll work for, you know, $7 or $8 an hour. Do you have anything you need done? And I've heard people have actually had some really great success with that. So there's a lot of possibilities for temporary and seasonal work. And it's a really, really safe fallback option. So even if your plan is to do the next couple things we're going to talk about, freelancing, or maybe you want to do a Van Nomad YouTube channel, even if after a month you're like, oh man, this is not working out so well right now. I need to make some money. Well, temporary and seasonal work is always there and is basically always available. So really, really safe option. It's what I'm going to be doing, at least initially. But what do you have on that?
Temporary and seasonal work is absolutely a fantastic idea. There's people that do it professionally. They're called migrant farm workers. Right, they travel from farm to farm to farm as the seasons change.
Harvesting. They aren't all Mexicans, but yeah, go ahead.
No, they are not. But they are all that's exactly what they do is they travel farm to farm to farm as the season allows to harvest different crops. That is an entirely justified profession and a lot of people do it, but then there's also logging and fishing and there's a whole lot of other outdoor work that is seasonal in addition to skiing and all that other stuff. There is a lot of seasonal work out there if one is willing to put in the actual work. It's not sitting behind a desk. It's not, you know, suit and tie kind of stuff. It's strap on your boots, put on your gloves. You're going to work. In addition right. to that, there's also day laborers. Day laborers is a big industry, especially where I live, because there's a lot of construction. There's a lot of landscaping. There's a lot of other very physical activity that a lot of people are not willing to do. And if you're willing to, again, strap the boots on and put the gloves on and actually work, there is work out there for people that know how to work and actually want to work.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I guess one other possibility, I don't know if he's talked about this publicly, so I'm not going to say who it is. But this guy's daughter actually works for like a traveling circus. And she lives this kind of nomadic lifestyle. So that's another possibility.
Renaissance fair.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So there are a lot of options out there. And I guess two major positives with temporary and seasonal work is that there's a higher chance of being paid under the table. Right. Since you're only going to be hired temporarily, I would imagine that a lot of these employers don't want to deal with all the paperwork if they're only going to have you for a couple few months. So that's a good thing. If you choose to, you know, not pay taxes on that, then you actually have that possibility with temporary and seasonal work versus being, a full on employee. And another thing that Rayo talked about was for temporary and seasonal work, if you're like a migrant farmer, you can take some of your pay in food, which would be tax free, and then you can sell that. So There's definitely some benefits to this sort of thing, and also too, as a van nomad where you don't have very major expenses, you can work for a couple few months, or I could say I'll just use me as an example. I could work for a couple few months at the ski resort, and then you know maybe I'll go travel for a couple months, and not have to worry about money. And then when I probably could use some work in the next month, I could go look around and figure out where I'm going to travel and work next. So it also provides a lot of freedom. And your work as well, and you can probably be a lot more choosy with what you're going to do. So yeah, what else you got?
Yeah, there's also another aspect of it, like the having an exportable skill or an exportable product.
Yes.
Like Jamie Baconic with his ghost pads, you don't necessarily have to have a stationary place to build those. You could build those in the back of a van and just have people order them online and ship them out from wherever you're at. There's also, as we talked about with being mechanically
like trade work and such. Yeah.
Yeah. Trade work. You can being a mechanic, you can be a traveling mechanic. That's a big thing, or a midwife or a doctor. If you have some sort of nursing or medical experience, that is an exportable skill that a lot of people don't have. That is another huge option that you can use to fund your van nomadism.
Stupid question. What's a midwife?
Midwife are the people that help the pregnant ladies give birth.
Oh, okay. It's what I thought, but I wasn't 100% sure. Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So there are a lot of options out there. There really are. You just got to look for them. And yeah, yeah.
Think outside the 9-to-5, people. the world is more than just 8 hours at a time. We talked about the migrant farm workers and the crops. If you're a van nomad and you're spending some time out in the wilderness and you come across a big blackberry bush, harvest a gallon of blackberries. Make it down into some blackberry wine or blackberry syrup. Those are both very sellable, and they're not exactly a mainstream product. So you can get a pretty penny for them. Or if you come across a hive, collect some fresh honey. If you're a hunter, and you get a deer or an elk
people will pay for venison. Oh man, people will pay for venison.
People will pay a lot for elk. I've looked at the prices online. there's a lot of it out there. You just have to think outside the box.
Yes, definitely. So the second option for making money on the road, I guess we've already presented like 25 options, but the second category here is freelancing. So, and I mean, this is basically any service or product you can sell somebody is freelancing. So this field is absolutely huge. You just got to have people that are demanding the product or service that you're providing. But I guess specifically in regards to van nomadism, maybe you've done a handful of conversions of your own, and you're more of an expert now. Well, you may be able to take on clients in that field, help potential van nomads put together their perfect home on wheels. And this is actually what Carl and Jala do, the van nomads from Australia that we interviewed on that Patreon exclusive episode. I released it on the main podcast feed sometime, but not for a while. Probably not until we get a couple few of those done. But yeah, you can go find that on Patreon, patreon.com/Vonnie. You need to do that. It's a really, really great discussion. We're going to be chatting with Carl and hopefully Jala again. Hopefully she'll be available for the next interview. But yeah, you could help people with their conversions. You could one of the guys that Cheap RV Living is the YouTube channel. He has a guy that helps him with his electrical. He says he's probably on like his fifth or sixth van now, and every single time this guy helps him with do all of the solar hookups and stuff. So that's a really great freelancing option. People need help with their solar panels. They need help with their with hooking all that stuff up. So that's one option. I've also seen quite a few of these van nomads, pursuing freelance photography, pretty popular. And the most popular so far, I think, that I've seen, as well as people who are millennials, freelance website design, SEO and marketing, online marketing, digital marketing. So those are the most popular, I would say, for van nomads. But I mean, again, it's just whatever service or product you have to offer, just find clients that will pay you for it, and bada bing, bada boom, you're a freelancer. Also, websites like Upwork, which I've been having a little success with, not a whole lot. I've had a couple jobs, but it's the first freelancing site I've ever gone on where I've actually gotten jobs. So Upwork.com is decent, and gonna be vague here. There will be another option for a freelancing website in the future, but can't talk about that now. So sorry, guys. Sorry, I'll keep you apprised as I can. But yeah, what do you have on freelancing?
I know what you're talking about, but I'm not going to tell the listeners.
Please don't.
No, I would not do that. As I said earlier, we do live in a digital world these days. There's a lot of services that are online and that are capable of being performed solely online without ever having to step foot in the office. Everything from coding to data entry to IT work, to video work, to audio work, to publishing, to writing stories for alternative news sites, blogs and videos, and there again, you got to get out of the box and to really exercise this 9-to-5 spook. There is a lot of stuff that is online that does not need to be done in person.
Makes you far more vulnerable to coercion too, if you can do it mobily and in a mobile fashion and also remotely.
Absolutely. And you don't have to work 9-to-5. You can work, you know, half days every single day, or you can work 2 or 3 days, you know, 8-hour days, and then take the other 4 days off. That's the beauty of the online world, is there is no real time frame, unless there is a deadline on the product, of course. But there is no morning, noon, night when it comes to the digital world. It's 24/7, and you can work whenever you can or whenever you want to, and then take the rest of the time off. If the surf is good, go surfing. If the surf is bad, then work. You know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I definitely agree. So yeah, I don't have anything else in the freelancing. Just if you have a pro, and we talked about this not too long ago on the Financial Independence miniseries here in season 3. You know, the freelancing is not easy. It's really not. We talked about some of the major problems newbies make that I've made when it comes to freelancing. If there's no one that wants to buy your product or service, or you know, pay you for your product or service, then it's not going to be a viable source of income. That just kind of goes without saying, but it's not easy. It's really not. Those freelancing websites may work for you. They may not. But building a freelance, business from the ground up is not easy to do. So if you're wanting to do that, and you're going to be a van nomad like me next year, start doing that now. Start getting some clients, and build up your portfolio, and really start to, in hopes that, when you hit the road, that you'll have that clientele and you'll have consistent business when you want it, of course. So the next possibility is vlogging, podcasting, and YouTube. Now, obviously, podcasting, I've been trying to monetize that for 3 years, but it doesn't work when you give everything away for free. But for vlogging and YouTubing, there are some, for average YouTube channels for van nomads, I'd say average, maybe 20,000 views a video. And they make about $500 a month on YouTube or thereabouts. That was what I heard a few of them say. So that's a pretty major source of income. If you can make even just a couple hundred bucks a month on YouTube, or maybe a couple hundred bucks in donations a month on your podcast, or if you do affiliate marketing for your vlog, if you're doing a van conversion, use Amazon affiliate links and post links to what you have in your build, and just have people buy through those, and you get a little cut. Doesn't cost the consumer any extra. You could run advertisements through Google AdSense, which, unless if you have to have a really, really massive website with lots of views, or you have to have a YouTube channel that gets a lot of hits on your videos. was AdSense. I've had it on for about 2 years, and I got my, it was my second payout this month. And I think I made like 300 total bucks from Google AdSense. So it's not a viable option for me now. But, you know, every once in a while, you might make a couple hundred bucks off of that. But vlogging, podcasting, and YouTube content creation, self-liberational media is definitely one path towards making money on the road. I'd just say don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't just if you make $1,000 a month off YouTube, don't just not do anything else because you're making that. YouTube obviously hates everybody, it seems like. So they could shut down your channel. They could demonetize it. All of those things. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. If you're making money on YouTube, fantastic. Great. Obviously, do that as long as you can. But with, you know, Fascist Tube, Fascist Tube and Fascist Book, with the way those things are going, not something to rely upon. Definitely not.
Oh, absolutely not. Don't get complacent, I think is what Shane is saying. If you find a revenue stream and it's working for you, awesome. But keep looking for other revenue streams.
Diversify those.
Yeah, diversify those. And YouTube is fantastic. It's a great resource, but it's not a one stop shop, and there's no guarantee that you're going to make money. But then
market's extremely saturated, anyways.
Yeah,
so the market. You have to really, really stand out. Thankfully, Van Nomadism is. It's kind of trending now, which is cool. So if there's a time to start doing it, it's now, or hopefully in 2019 when I'm going to do it. But yeah, you know, get in as early as you can for the Van Nomadism thing, because it is a trend now.
I was going to say YouTube is a fantastic resource, but you do need to diversify and you need to get into other markets. You know, Stimit and DTube and you have your own blogs and all this other stuff, Facebook, Twitter,
and that's a great. Okay, sorry to cut in. I actually forgot about those for some reason, which I shouldn't, because my post for the Kokesh Graham Smith debate, $440 is what it's up to now. Half of that being liquid steam dollars. But anyways, yes. If you have a YouTube channel, get a Steemit account, get a DTube account. If you do podcasts, get a DSound account, and anything you put on YouTube, put that also on Steemit and on the Steemit platforms, because you can monetize those. As I said, with one post, I made $440, or I will this coming Sunday. It's a really, really awesome option. It may take some time to build up a following, but here's the two reasons. You actually like if you aren't making much off YouTube, the Steemit can help supplement that income. And secondly, if YouTube shuts down your accounts, you have everything mirrored on a decentralized blockchain blogging platform. So there's two really good reasons to do that, anyways. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna bring up with DTube, DSound, and Steemit. It's on the blockchain, so it's not disappearing, right? YouTube can kill your channel and take it down, but the products that are on Steemit, DTube, DSounder, they're going to be there forever because they're on the blockchain.
Yeah, exactly. And you do have some. I mean, it's kind of up to the gods, so to speak. You know, if for average people to make a lot of money on Steemit, it's just up to the whale gods. see if they bestow their gloriness upon us jellyfishes. But still, it's a good route to go. And even, you know, like for podcasts I put up, most of my posts now get about $2, which means that one of those is Steem dollars and one of that goes into the vested Steem power. So anytime I post anything on there, I typically get about $4, which that's not bad. That's not bad at all. And when you post every single day, you know, that could be like that. Your Steemit could literally be, if you spend like $30 a week on food, you know, you could probably remove one of your expenses or pay for one of your expenses through, blogging on Steemit. Now, it's not going to be a lot, probably. Hopefully it is. I hope you have all the success in the world. But again, the whales have to bestow their gloriness upon you in order for you to make a huge money on there, or you have to have a massive following. So great options, great ways to supplement income, and also a great way to back up and mirror all of your content, so it's not going to disappear. But anything else on vlogging, podcasting, or YouTube?
Good luck.
Wise words. All right, and I guess I should make one note for those not familiar with the Steemit platform. I mentioned whales and jellyfishes, and that might seem a little odd to people. But the way the site's set up, it's proof of stake, so the people who have the most steam power have the most influence on the platform. So you do have to rely upon, you know, the 1% of Steemit, at least to a certain extent. But hey, at least this wasn't done through fascism, right? So I guess it's more fair, and you actually have the chance to kind of benefit from it. So anyways, this next one was something I added just a moment ago. But another way to make money on the road is digital currency speculation, and also mining digital currencies. Now, we'll talk about both of these separately. So with digital currency speculation, that doesn't mean just buying Bitcoin and holding that, you know, alone. There's over 1,000 digital currencies out there. So what you do is you look for you look at the charts, and you kind of hopefully guess accurately what ones are going to jump up in the next couple days or couple weeks. It's worked out really well for me. And a couple of the portfolios I had, they increased by like 20,000%, some ridiculous number. It's a little bit of a learning curve, but if you have any experience with trading stocks or the stock market, it's not too much of a hurdle over. You just kind of have to learn a little bit about digital currencies, but that's a really, really good option. And you don't see in the stock market, you don't see gains like you see with digital currencies. You could buy, and this has happened to me probably 10 or 15 times, where I'd buy a digital currency at like a penny, and it'd go up to like 11 cents the next day. So you don't see those sorts of gains in the stock market, as far as I understand it. Things move a lot slower there. But you can make some decent money, a great way to supplement your income. And also the digital currency game is at very, very early stages. It's only been around for like 10 years, and probably only been the past few years when it's really drawn attention. So even if you just buy some and hold it, that's a really great kind of a retirement plan, I guess you could say, at least one possible path. And you have the possibility to make a lot of money. So that's one aspect of it. And then also digital currency mining. And I actually posted in one of the Van Nomadism groups if anyone had tried this, and it was not a fruitful question. They were trying to lecture me on. Mining and how digital currencies work, thinking I was stupid. So it didn't work too well. There's like, oh my gosh, you can't mine Bitcoin. The average person can't do it now. It's like, oh my God, do you know there are other ones you can mine? But anyways, you're probably not going to get a great response from most people in the Van Nomad community. What it would come down to is probably one or two GPU miners. And I mean, you probably have to have a couple solar panels devoted entirely to that. I would think, yeah, if each of them takes 100, 200 watts, I don't know if that's an hour or a day or what that would be, honestly. I need to look into it more, but you probably have to have a solar panel or two devoted to just cryptocurrency mining. So, I mean, it's possible. I'll have to look into the power usage to see if it's actually feasible, but I don't see any reason why it couldn't be done on the road, especially. So I guess here's a possibility. So there's those things called RV parks, and you can pay a little extra to have access to their electricity, or maybe it's not extra, maybe it's just part of the camping. But you could only mine whenever you're hooked up. Like if you stay a week at an RV campsite a month. And just mine for that entire month, or mine for that entire week. I mean, you could feasibly, make some additional money. So I guess that is a possibility. As far as doing it off the grid, I don't know 100%. And again, I tried to reach out to some folks in the Van Nomad community, but they didn't really understand the focus of my question. I just wanted to know if anyone was doing it, or if anyone had thought about it, and what would the power usage be if you have any numbers. And no, it wasn't a very good venture. But you have anything for digital currency speculation or mining?
It's gambling just like everything else. Just like the regular stock market, it is a gamble. And the gamble is that you could lose money. You absolutely could lose money, but you could also make a whole lot of money. I mean, Bitcoin was up to what, like $20,000 $20,000 at one point.
Yeah. A year ago, I think it was. It was just surpassed the price of gold. Was it last? I think it was like last May or June. It surpassed the price of gold, and then at the end of 2017, it hit $20,000. So, and some of the altcoins, the other digital currencies, do that too. Obviously not to the scope of Bitcoin. Bitcoin's the first and the most expensive, but at the same time, you know, you can still get some pretty major gains. But yeah, go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. As you mentioned, with the penny stocks, or not the penny stocks, but the really, really low priced cryptocurrencies, you can buy a whole lot of them for very, very little, and then they can shoot up, you know, 7-8, you know, they can shoot up 7-8-10, you know, 1200% in a day or two or a week, and then you can make a pretty decent profit.
Exactly. I'm glad you mentioned that specifically, because you know, it's low risk. Like with some of these with these altcoins, it's low risk. Like you're buying essentially penny stocks, or sometimes a hundredth of a penny stocks, and you buy like I've got 15,000 Noblecoin, for example, and 900 Electronium. Like even if those go up to like I'm not going to do the math on the podcast here, but I mean you put like $50 in, and it's not unfeasible, you know, if you looked at the charts and, you know, do right and kind of predicting the market. I mean, you could like triple or quadruple your money overnight. Definitely possible. It happens a lot. So yeah, it's a low, you know, low risk, definitely low risk, with pretty high rewards.
Oh, absolutely. If you can buy, you know, $20 worth of this at a very, very low, and then it goes up 1200%. You could walk away with $100 pretty damn easy, and the $100 goes a long way in a Van Nomad.
Yes, and even if you just like, you know, buying for long term holds, even if you buy like 15,000 Noblecoin as I did, and just wait for the massive bull run, if that's in 6 months or 9 months or 3 months, whenever it is, and you just hold on to it, then I mean, yeah, I mean you could make a whopping amount of money. And one shot. So I mean, it's worth doing. It's worth trying out. Obviously, start the first portfolio I had, and this is what I'd recommend for people brand new to digital currency speculation. I put $27 into my first portfolio, and didn't put anything else in for the next 3 or 4 months. And within 3 or 4 months, it was up to over $2,000. So if I would have lost everything, I would have only lost $27. So that gives you an idea of how you can kind of do this, and it's a great time to do it. The market's down. I haven't checked the market cap, but I checked a couple days ago and it was like $350 billion, and around
337,802.
Okay, 337 billion for the total market cap, and back in November I think it was like $700 billion. So
yeah,
there's definitely some time. There's definitely, I would say without doubt, there's a bull run coming. So it's a great time. Great time to buy in. Great time to buy in. But anything else, man?
Nope.
Cool. So I guess the other way, you know, making a living on the road is to not have to do it. For example, if you already have all the money you need to live saved up already, that kind of negates the need for employment altogether. In other words, you have already achieved financial independence. So there is one example in that Without Bound documentary, and he said, well, how much money would I need to live for the rest of my life? And he said he just pulled out a random number, $100,000. And, you know, just 1, 2, 3, 4, easy peasy. He just made $100,000 and decided to become a Van Nomad. Results not guaranteed. But, maybe you already have all the money saved up and you can just go live as a nomad, not have to worry about making money at all. Great. You're far ahead of most people. And I salute you in your efforts. You've done well with your money, and you didn't frivolously spend it on consumerist bullshit. So, you know, props to you. You did a good thing. Enjoy your life. I don't know what else to say.
No, you don't need a whole lot of money to be a Van Nomad. I mean, if you live on $500 a month, $500 a month is not a whole lot. That is $16.66 a day. $500 a month only comes out to $6,000 a year. So you realistically that you do not need a whole lot of money.
If you have $60,000 in the bank, you could probably live for about 10 years on the road.
Oh, and that's not including the interest and everything else building up on the account.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is not expensive to be a Van Nomad. Yes, it does take a little bit of money to get into it, And it does, but that can be easily achieved again with some sacrifice and some planning and some minimalism of your lifestyle. It's entirely doable. It's anybody can do this. Anybody can be free. Retrospectively, anybody can be a van nomad and can limit their vulnerability to coercion. For not a whole lot of money. It does not take a lot of money to be free.
Yeah, that's true. And guys, the best thing I can say is that in just 2 months. Well, yeah, and just probably it's probably been a month or month and a half or 2 months actually. I've made so much progress towards van nomadism, and it's going to happen maybe earlier than I intended, earlier than I planned. So if I can do it, you can do it. It's not that hard. It's really not that hard. Yeah. If you have this burning desire for freedom, like I have, and every single day in the status of all society gets more difficult to deal with, make a plan, work towards it, live frugally, live minimally, and get out of debt, save up your money, save up some money, get a van, convert it, and you're on the road, and you're free. You're free. Now, I guess the only real difference is that's sure, the modern van nomad community as it is today, they're Vanuan in some ways, but they're not Vanuans in some others. So for us here at the Vanu podcast, with also our aspirations for an invulnerability to coercion, which they're synonymous, but still, making these, taking the extra steps to not only be free, but to also, increase our mean time to harassment. For maybe modern van nomads, 5 years, 5 years MTH. Maybe we want to be, 10 years MTH. I don't know. I just wrote the part in the Direct Action Path to Freedom of Mean Time to Harassment, so it's fresh in my mind. But Vanuans do things a little differently. So you can learn a lot from modern van nomads, but there's some very particular things for us Vanuans. So, yeah, what else do you have?
I didn't have anything else on that one.
Okay, so the last point I have here is something we kind of already talked about, but I guess I'll just mention it again because I think it's pretty important. Having a nest egg, I think that's something great to set out for. I think most van nomads, at least from the videos I've watched and the advice that I've seen given, $5,000, or I guess kind of what I'm doing because I want to hit the road faster. I don't want to work for an extra 2 months probably. I don't know. I might hit that point where I've got the van converted and I still have my normal 9-to-5 Servile Society job. I honestly do think that when I get to that point, I've thought about this a lot. I get to that point, and I'll probably just work another 2 months just so I can have another $1,000 saved up. But anyways, if you want to get to it faster like I do, you maybe save up $2,500 and then have a credit card. And it's not the best route to go. It's not the most Vanuan route to go. But you got to just do it, man, right? That's the most popular advice. Just do it.
Yes, that line tends to come out of a lot of Vanuan videos. Or van nomad videos and van conversion videos. Just do it. That's I hear that a lot. But that nest egg, it's not difficult to build up. It can be done relatively painlessly. Think about what you pay for rent and utilities and all that good stuff. Say you get your van and you move into your van and. Say you hold on to your job for a little bit, right? You don't have to run off into the woods as soon as you get your van. Move into the van for a month or two and think about all that money that you would save.
Oh man, yeah.
It would not be difficult to build up $5,000 or $2,500 or $3,000.
Exactly. Yeah, if you move out in your van and keep your full-time job and you don't have that $1,000, monthly house payment. I mean, yeah, you save that $1,000, and if you live frugally, you probably do it in a couple months, and then you can hit the road. That was something I considered. I think I might have talked about this in this podcast, but I thought about moving into my car, so I could save that $350 a month. But I realized the difficulty. It's not like I have a $1,000 house payment, right? $350 for everything included. That's all I pay a month. I figured, sure, I could save the $350 a month, but I think it would be worth – I think it would be more too much of a hassle. I think it might actually set me back some because it would be – I'd probably have less time for content creation, figuring out all that stuff. And, you know, content creation is where kind of my passive, not really my passive income, but I guess one of the sources of income that I'll have on the road. So I think it'd just be more difficult, and I don't think I'd be able to pursue these other avenues of income that I'm working towards now. So I thought about doing that. Not for me, but if you have $1,000 a month house payment and, you know, you buy a cheap couple thousand dollar a month van or couple thousand dollars a month, buy a couple thousand dollar van and, you know, make it livable and save $1,000 a month, that would be worth it, I think. I definitely think that would be worth it. Just wasn't for me in my particular situation. And plus, I'm not that far off anyways. So, to each his own, to each his own.
Yeah. You know, as we keep talking about, this isn't something you dive into. It does take work to build into this and to create this lifestyle that you want to live. You can't just – you're not going to dive into this head first and then crack your head on the bottom of the pool. You need to know how deep the pool is and all that good stuff. It's the same with van nomadism. You have to work into this. You have to minimalize your lifestyle because you're not going to bring everything with you into the van. And you can start that now, and by starting that now, it allows you to ease the process, to make it more painless. And you can save a lot of money just by altering your lifestyle a little bit. And that will help make your transition into van nomadism a whole lot easier.
Yes. And I'm glad you brought that up. So yeah, even though, you know, I might be a year out now. Until I can hit the road. I'm hoping earlier than that, but I think at that point it's okay, Shane, you got to get on the road. It's kind of, well, not you got to, it's okay, everything's in order, go hit the road is kind of how it would be. But even now there's still some things I'm doing, to prepare myself for this lifestyle, living minimally and frugally. As I've said many times, I think that needs to be repeated over and over again. If you're considering this lifestyle, you know, I've been, it's been crazy, man. I really didn't realize how much money I was hemorrhaging even just 3 or 4 months ago. You know, all of that frivolous spending really does add up. And if you don't pay attention to it, your money will just disappear and you won't know where it went. And yeah, it wasn't stolen from you. I mean, you just were bad with your money. I was just bad with my money. So I guess that's one aspect, one thing I'm doing now. And then also I'm trying to eat healthier. And something I need to continue working on is, I need to do what I did last year about this time, and make my week's worth of food on Sunday night, and then just take my food to lunch, take my lunch with me to work every single day. I need to do that. I need to. It's healthier. It saves money, and there's no reason not to be doing it other than I'm being lazy, guys. When it comes to that aspect, or maybe I'm just doing so much other stuff, I just really don't have time, but I need to make time for it. I really need to make time for it. So I don't know. There's a lot of things you can be doing right now, to prepare. And in regards to money, making a living on the road, you can also start to, build your freelancing business. You can, start to build your portfolio. You can, you know, pursue financial independence and start saving every single penny that you possibly can. You can start doing research on seasonal and temporary seasonal employment at, you know, places you're going to be traveling. You can do research on, you know, various areas and, which ones are, you know, less coercive regarding the bludgies, because van nomads talk about that, by the way. You can just do a bunch of research, figuring out where you're going to go, where you'll be most invulnerable to coercion. In other words, you can do some research on your strategic relocation. There's a lot you can do. You can start networking with other van nomads that are out there. There's so much that you can do, even if you aren't on the road now. So I don't know. I just kind of leave it with that, at least to some extent, that even if you aren't on the road yet, even if you're working towards it, even if you don't know what Vani lifestyle you're going to pursue, as I didn't for 3 years, it seemed like two and a half years, wasn't sure what I wanted to do. Pursuing financial independence and making your employment location independent is a massive step. And even if you don't know what strategy you're going to pursue, any one of them will be advanced by you're already achieving of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Every step towards your goal is a step. It is a step in the right direction. And as we said, it's not impossible. There are people out there living this lifestyle right now. There are hundreds, and probably there's thousands of them out there living this lifestyle right now. Tens of thousands out there living that lifestyle right now. So it's entirely possible. It's entirely possible. If they can do it, you can do it. If they can make the sacrifice, you can make the sacrifice. If they can save the money to do that, you can save the money to do that. It's not difficult. Just fucking do it.
Yes. I like that. I like that. Any other closing thoughts, man?
Nope. I'm good.
All right. All right. And that's all we have for you. The website is VonnePodcast.com. Please consider financially supporting the podcast. Again, this is one route to financial independence for me. And also, as I mentioned previously, every donation to this podcast will go to the Venue and Van Nomad Fund, my fund. Kyle and I were going to split all the income from it, but he's never here. So we already kind of worked that out. But it'll go to my Venue and Van Nomad Fund. And, beyond that, it'll help go towards my financial independence. So if you want to help me get on the road quicker, the best way is Patreon. For just $2 a month, you get exclusive access to episodes and special announcements not made to the general public. And there's one. Oh, man, there's one that you can go hear all about right now. And, you need to. You need to. Just visit patreon.com/Vonnu. You can also shoot us some digital currencies or make contributions via PayPal. Real quick, I want to talk about the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, which will be happening June 21st to June 25th at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan. If you've never been, you need to come. If you've already been, I guarantee you'll be back. Anyways, it's a really incredible time. This will be my fourth year attending, my third year giving a talk. The subject for this presentation is the Second Realm. It'll actually be presented at a Second Realm Freedom Festival. And Jason here has already heard the first run through of the presentation. I think he found it valuable. There's obviously a lot of things I need to work on, but I think it's good. I think it's good. And I'll also be putting together some sort of a Vonnu roundtable as I did last year. There are about three or four listeners there. There are more listeners there, but these were the people. A lot of stuff happens at Freedom Festivals, man, and it's all spontaneous. except for like the scheduled speakers and presentations, but you never know what's going on. So I was able to gather up a few Vonnuans, and we just talked Vonnu, smoked, drank, and just chilled for like 3 or 4 hours, just talking about Vonnu and freedom, and it was a really, really incredible time. So I'll be putting together something similar to that, and I'm hoping we had 3 or 4 last year, shoot for 10 this year. So get out there, again, June 21st to June 25th at the Circle Pine Center. Just visit mplfest.org. Again, mplfest.org. And early registration is now open. You can save 15% off camping costs by paying in Bitcoin before May 1st. And please let them know Shane sent you. I don't get any discount in my purchase price. I don't get anything from doing this. But I, they've been really good to me. They really have. So I want to help them make this event bigger and bring more people to this festival. And I would much rather... This is going to sound like a dick thing. This is going to sound dickish, but, I'd much rather see a bunch of Vonnuans come to this festival than a bunch of minarchist-controlled schizophrenics. great people, it's great to be around them at the festival, but in regards to Vonnu, I'd certainly love to see more Vonnuans at the festival spreading this peaceful, extremely plausible strategy for personal freedom, or Vonnu and vulnerability to coercion. Next week, we'll cover some miscellaneous items regarding van nomadism, mail forwarding, legal interstices, for example, vehicle registration, mobile internet, and also some discussion on the van nomad community as it stands today. It'll be a great one. We're looking forward to it. Hope you are, too. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon. Hey y'all, Shane here. You love Amazon, don't you? You do a lot of shopping there, right? I think we all do. Well, one great way you can support Liberty Under Attack is by doing all of your shopping through our Amazon affiliate link. It costs you nothing extra, and we get a cut. Getting ready to purchase a bunch of books on Austrian economics, a knife for your bug out bag, bulk additions to your food storage, Make your purchase by first visiting libertyunderattack.com/Amazon. Again, libertyunderattack.com/Amazon. And thank you in advance for your support.